just think the hospitality is the thing. I'm so drawn to this cross-culturally around the world. Hospitality is so immense. And if I might, there's just a short poem that I think speaks to this called Red Brocade by Naomi Shihab Nye. And it's just a short little piece that says, the Arabs used to say, when a stranger appears at your door, feed him for 3 days before asking who he is, where he's come from, where he's headed. That way he'll have strength enough to answer. Or by then, you'll be such good friends, you don't care. Let's go back to that. Rice? Pine nuts? Here, take the red brocade pillow. My child will serve water to your horse. No, I was not busy when you came. I was not preparing to be busy. That's the armor everyone put on to pretend they had a purpose in the world. I refuse to be claimed. Your plate is waiting. We will snip fresh mint into your tea.
Welcome to Always On, a podcast from the Yes Jam community. This is Joven Julien, the storytelling and alignment integrator at Yes. We are excited to launch this podcast in conjunction with our 30th anniversary. As would be expected of any 30-year-old, Yes has been through a series of chapters with many transitions, evolutions, changes, and growth, culminating in the current era of Yes that we have today. We are grateful to draw upon the wisdom and stories from wider community of founders, past and current staff members, our board, and past participants of our programs, Yes Tour participants, Yes Campers, and of course, Yes Jammers. In this first series of podcasts, we'll be slowing down to hear about aspects of Yes's history. This is a time to remember, to put together the pieces of our wider body and see the whole picture together. We hope that you'll join us as we share how this profound experiment in transformational healing, liberation, and community building has emerged over time. Future podcasts will share stories about how Yes Jammers have taken their learnings into their work and communities, and how Jam facilitators have learned and grown through their journey. The Jam is always on, and so are we. Thanks for saying yes, and here we go. Welcome forward to this, the latest episode of the Yes Podcast. We're here today with Shilpa and Tad. A few weeks into my own quarantine during this COVID-19 moment, and excited to step back into an earlier time, into a different time, to hear about Yes, to hear about the early stages of the Jam, and to hear about Tad's journey through the organization in that time, and about what's going on in Tad's life today. So please listen, check out our earlier podcast if you want to hear about some different eras of Yes, and stay tuned for not only future moments, but also stories from the present. Shilpa?
Thanks, Jovan. Oh, it's so amazing to be here today with Tad Hargrave, who comes to us all the way from Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. For all of us folks out there. One time, Tad and I actually had a contest about whether I could name more Canadian provinces than he could name American states. And thankfully, for my U.S. education, I won that. So that was good. But Tad is with us from Edmonton, and Tad has been such a pivotal person in the Yes journey, and is credited, as I know, with being the founder of jams and the idea of jamming overall. So we're going to get to hear all about that. Tad is a delight to be around. For all of you who haven't had a chance to jam with him, you are missing out because among many other talents, Tad does close-up magic and improv comedy and singing and songwriting. And so there's just a lot of fun to be with him. And he's also just a really thoughtful human being, so deeply steeped in decolonizing and unlearning some of the colonial histories of his own life and land, and also tapping into and re-indigenizing himself to some of his Scottish ancestry, among other things. Tad has been for many years working on a project called Marketing for Hippies, and I'm sure we'll get to hear more about that and how all of the Jam and Yes learnings were integrated into that journey. For now, I'm just so delighted to welcome Tad. I'm really, really happy to have you with us. Thanks for being here.
It's good to be here. I'm afraid to say anything after that. Just blow my rep. That was such a beautiful introduction.
This is the end. Well, Ted, maybe we could start with the question of how did you arrive at Yes? How did you arrive from Canada and end up in Santa Cruz?
Well, like many people in high school, I started eating a vegan diet, much to the horror of my mom. And one of the things that had me go in that direction was reading a book by John Robbins, Diet for New America. I think I'd maybe seen the documentary first. And then I heard that John was coming to Edmonton to speak. And I went, and it was a really beautiful experience. It was one of those, somebody speaks for two and a half hours, but it feels like half an hour, 45 minutes. And was really struck by it. And then Deo, his wife, got up and she said, "Our son Ocean does this amazing thing called Yes and these Yes camps." And it was one of those, oh my God, my whole life I've been looking for something like this. You know, what they were talking about, the camps, getting together, environmental, social justice, talking about food choices. And it was just such a, yeah, you know, I just knew I had to go. And I had a job at the time, and I told them I was going to go to the summer camp. I didn't tell them how long I was going to be away. And so I took a 40-hour bus ride from Edmonton to Oregon for this. And that's where I met Ocean and Michelle. They were both facilitating that summer camp. And it was just this immediate homecoming. I didn't realize at the time, but there was a lot of Waldorf, you know, influence. Michelle gone to Waldorf school. So a lot felt very familiar. And I just instantly became best friends with Ocean and Michelle, and it became clear this is what I need to do right now in my life. And so I moved down to Santa Cruz the next year to work with Yes and doing fundraising and all of this. And I'd be down there for, you know, 8 months and come back for 6 months. And I went back and forth quite a bit helping Yes with the summer camps at the time. And then there was a point, and then that turned into facilitation trainings. And then there came a point where I was kind of done with the camps, and it felt like the energy was kind of dwindling in that area. And then I'd moved back to Edmonton because the going back and forth was real hard. And this was pre-Facebook and any social media, really. And I just felt like I needed to root myself somewhere. So I moved back to Edmonton. And Ocean and Michelle said, "Well, we'd still love to work with you. Is there a project you could imagine?" And in 1996, Saul Solomon had organized this event called the World Youth Leadership Camp. And they brought together 40 young environmental activists. I think it was for 10 days. David Brower was there. Adam Yauch from the Beastie Boys came. Winona LaDuke was there. Incredible event. And so I said, I want to do that, but 7 days, not 10 days, and not just environmental leaders, but a broader thing. I want to pick them. And at that point, I think Michelle was pregnant at the time, and they were just going through a lot, or they just had kids, and it was they were properly overwhelmed. And so they just said, "Look, no." And I said, "Well, okay, I'll stay in Edmonton." And then they said, "Oh, okay, well, you can do it, but this has to be your thing. Because if this falls apart, it's you pick up the pieces, not us. We just don't have the bandwidth." So I said, "All right." And then the first jam happened in 1999 at the John Woolman School in Grass Valley, I think it is, up in Northern California. And it was magical. It was a really beautiful event. And lots learned, you know, lots of mistakes made along the way. And then we did it again the next year. And here it is. You know, 20, 21 years later.
Tad, can I ask you, how old were you when you moved from Edmonton to Santa Cruz the first time?
Oh, man. I think I was 20. Oh, man. Well, I'm born in 75, and I moved. I was about 20.
20.
19 or 20, yeah.
And can I ask, how old were you when you stepped into organizing your first jam?
Well, that was 99, so 24, I guess. Or I might have been 23 at the time.
What was going on at the time, just in your world and in the world that that you think made it right to start the jams? What was calling forth the jams at that time?
Well, you know, I suppose this was the anti-globalization protest, in Seattle, the battle in Seattle, and then there was the April 21st in Washington, D.C. was the next one. So all of this was kind of, I think, murmuring in the background. But particularly for the jams, I went to a number of conferences and talked with my youth leader friends who were going to conferences. And there was this general complaint and frustration with them that, first of all, they would often try to pull something like, let's get a statement from the youth of the world or priorities from the youth of the world. But of course, you can imagine where that goes, because the priorities from somebody in Africa might be different than somebody in Canada. And so it was frustrating. Or there'd be some statement written and be put on somebody's desk and framed and never, nothing done with it for the rest of everyone's life. So it felt futile, and a lot of plenary sessions and keynote speakers. And while I was sitting in one of them, I just remember looking around thinking, if I could get 30 of these people together for a week just to hang out, that's it, not even a schedule, literally just in a house for a week, it would be the most incredible thing, and it would be so much good would come from it. I just had that intuitive sense of that. And so that's where it came from, was wanting to create a space for good people to meet each other, which is just a thread that's proven itself throughout my days, that you bring good people together and good things will happen. If you find any project, and I would just invite everyone listening to this to consider this. Think of a project that inspires you the most. And if you were to ask them, how did this project start? Almost always, it's a conversation. Somebody turns to somebody and says, man, you know what we should do? You know what somebody should do? You know what would be really great? And so with the jams, there was this, I was wondering it, and Saul Solomon had already done such a beautiful example of it in 96. And then there's this conversation, with Ocean and Michelle, and this is how it begins.
And why jam? How did you, what did the name mean to you?
That was one of the trickiest parts, because while I'd loved what Saul had done with the World Youth Leadership Camp, just people making, statues out of popsicle sticks and singing Kumbaya. And it evoked all the wrong things. It wasn't what I really wanted to have the vibe be. And so, but then what else to call it? Symposium, summit, gathering, colloquium, conversation, nothing fit. Everything was so lame. I was this is killing me. So we got to do this event, but you got to call it something. You can't just say, come to our thing. And, so then I was at Badass Jack's on 109th Street and 87th Avenue in Edmonton. And I was just thinking, I said, the vibe I want is like musicians. Musicians get together, they jam. They don't know what music they're going to create. They just sit down and then amazing stuff will come out of it. And sometimes this is where whole albums or, new bands come out and new sounds that have never been made before come out just from musicians getting together, being willing to experiment and play. And it's like, that's the vibe I want, is this kind of jam. Oh my God, jam, that's what we're going to call it. And I remember I called my friend Da. I said, Da, check this out, World Youth Leadership, jam. Isn't that dope? That's so great. That's such a good name. Okay, thanks. See you later. And so I got really excited about the name, because it finally, there was a word that captured the feeling that I was going for. And then it shrunk from World Youth Leadership Jam to just World Jam, and now become the Yes Jams.
Got it. Ted, you were there at the inception of the jams inside of Yes. Can you speak to what were some of the learnings or energies or themes that sort of transferred from the camps into the jams?
Well, a lot of it, a lot of the foundation, all the, checking in, the whole listening, speaking in I statements, I think, the real fundamental stuff. I remember one of the things Michelle said, and she's so gifted in this, listening, capacity. So the old joke goes, my friends used to tell me, Ted, you're not very good at listening. I think that's what they said. But she was really good at framing it for people. Look, we're not here to agree or disagree. We're just here to listen. We're just here to seek to understand each other. That's all. And there are a lot of exercises from Yes Camps that definitely transfer directly into the jams. And I think, you know, then the jam sort of evolved because it was clear, okay, certain activities good for the camps, you know, for people who are 18 to, or like, man, sometimes younger, you know, high school, college, different exercises may be appropriate for the jams. But a lot. I mean, culturally, that's where the roots are. And of course, that's the beauty. That was the blessing of it, but that was also the trouble because you have these Northern California white hippie sort of roots. And so that was one of the big things that had to be contended with as the jams grew.
Can you speak to how did like the organizers and facilitants of those early jams, how did they contend with that? And how did the new participants, the new energies as they came in, how did they evolve the concept of what jamming was? What did they bring in?
Yeah, well, to the first question, how did we deal with it? It might be a more accurate question without the word how. At the beginning, did we? And I don't think we did in the beginning. It wasn't that first jam. To me, there wasn't a lot of awareness, at least in me, about that we even had a culture, that there was this Northern California culture, that this was a very place and time based way of proceeding in the world. I just thought, no, well, this is how humans get together. Of course, we get together. We don't play any music on the stereo. We sing these songs that are just normal human songs that, you know, of course, come from a real particular, you know, tradition. And so to me, there was just utter ignorance, at least on my end. I can't speak for anyone else, but I just had no sense. And then what began to happen, I mean, to me, one of the moments where this first really came up was a conversation with Kumba Ture, where she was very clear. She's like, look, I would do this event differently. If this were my event, I would, but I'm coming to you. So, like, I help you with your thing. But it's your thing. This is your culture. This is not the way I would do it. And I was so baffled. I was like, do it differently? But how? Like, I don't know. I just couldn't imagine what could be changed or what would be better somehow. And but of course, in that situation, there wasn't enough time to make those changes because we did. It was, oh gosh, but Kumba, you know, we do value your wisdom and we want that to appear in the event. But it was weeks away, so that's too late. It's too late to try to do a cultural shift or even imagine what that might be. And so this became one of the, I think, early learnings for the jams was that for facilitators to, I mean, at the USA Jam, which was unmitigated disaster, beauty came from it, but you know that doesn't mean it wasn't a disaster. At that event, the myself and the other two facilitators, we really only got together the day before. I think there had been some emails back and forth, but we were all so busy and we got together the night before. And even then, we were busy doing logistics. And so we started off not on the same footing. But then, how are you going to do that in one night, even if you don't have to do logistics? So then there was a sense of, okay, we need to get together a few days before. And then, of course, it became very clear that's not enough. And then, with the situation with Kumba, I realized, oh, this is, we need to start talking months before. And then, eventually, what this built into and evolved into was this project, beautiful project for a while, the Global Collaborative, where a lot of the facilitators of the jams were just getting together to build relationships and deepen relationships. And that this is ultimately the ground from which any successful jam comes from. This is why the, I mean, I'm sure every jam facilitator can relate to this, that the schedule that you draw up for the jam is the first consequence of actually doing the jam. It's the first casualty, I should say. It's the first victim. It's the first thing to go when you do a jam. You have this beautiful schedule, and then you show up with the real people at the real place, and immediately things have to start changing. But the process of coming up with the schedule is the thing that allows you to improvise in the moment. Because in the process of doing the schedule, you have to have very hard conversations of, well, how do we begin this? How do we end this? What's most important to us? We have more exercises than we can do. So what's most important to us in this situation? And I think it's those conversations founded on a trust that allows you to, because otherwise what happens is in the moment, you look at your co-facilitator and you realize something very different is important to them than for you. And then there's not enough trust to pivot, you know, and to just, you know, because there are certain people that if they were to say, you know, for jam facilitation, if they were turning to me and say, Ted, I got this, I would just sit back and say, yes, you do. And, you know, marvel as they did whatever they were going to do without needing to know. But in the beginning, there just wasn't that. There weren't those, the depth of relationship and alignment of what the hell are we even doing? What matters most to us? What's the worldview? Even let's say around, because for me anyways, as a white Canadian male coming from Edmonton, this whole anti-oppression thing was just completely brand new. And so there's a lot of different points of view, even in the anti-oppression scene, you know, of how to proceed with it. And of course, this only gets more and more complicated as time goes on. Even what to call it, conversations about privilege and wait, what is privilege? And are we saying privilege is inherently good or bad? Or it's, and if you're not on the same page about these things, then you're going to try to get on the same page in a heated conversation in the room. Just turn to your co-facilitators. Wait, can everyone hold on a second? Hold on. Wait a second. What do you believe about privilege? You know, really, where do you think whiteness comes from? Let's discuss. We'll be back in 10 minutes, everybody. You're not going to solve this in the moment. And so it's helpful to have those conversations and build those relationships in advance. And so that's, to me, that's what the planning for a jam is the tending to all of that.
I just want to throw in something here, just as I'm listening to you, Tad, and appreciating you a lot. There's something super prescient about, you know, super insightful about naming it a jam when you say all of this, you know, because it's operating on all of these levels, this level of deep listening, and also the space of making mistakes, quote unquote mistakes, like knowing that the music might be clunky sometimes and not sound so good, and that sticking with it and continuing to build the relationship and build the trust, both for the team and the facilitators involved, as well as for the community as a whole, is what eventually leads to something that feels more harmonious and more like integrated. You know, not that it's all the same, but that all of these different pieces start to come together, and that listening and listening and sharing and offering and listening and sharing and offering, just can lead to something so beautiful, so, so beautiful. And so there's just, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking, oh, wow. Like, I wonder, did you really feel all of that insight, you know, when you were naming it the jam? And I know how much I turn back to that metaphor over and over again while jamming. Mm-hmm. Like, we don't know the answers. We're coming from different places. All of us have a piece of the whole, but nobody has the whole, even as we are each whole, you know? And so we're building something together. And I just want to really like lift that up right now as you're sharing all of this, and the levels of relationship and trust and like sticking with it, you know, even when the music sounds like shit, you know, just like sticking with it, going to try again. And so I just want to really honor you, because I can imagine those early days of like all of that clunkiness also, as well as the beauty that was just emerging at the same time. So.
Yeah, amen. It's and this has to, a few things should probably properly be said at this point. First of all, anything I'm sharing as memories, anything you hear that sounds like the voice of authority about what happened, should be let go of right away, because I don't particularly imagine I've got any authoritative take on my own life and what happened, let alone, you know, this project. So there's a lot of points of view. There are a lot of memories about how this went down, and certainly other people would remember other things or remember the same things in different ways. And, you know, for anyone listening who's doing a jam or thinking about doing a jam, just my wholehearted commiseration up front for everything that Shilpa just said. You know, there's going to be bad music that comes. It's going to be clunky. There's going to be so many mistakes made, and people are going to be hurt, and friendships are going to be lost. All of this is true. You know, and there's a certain inevitability about some of this. And it's brave. It's a very brave, reckless sometimes maybe, but it's a brave thing to do. And this is, I do remember at one jam, it just going horribly wrong, or it seeming, you know, anyways. And it was Kumba and Malika who were facilitating. And somebody saying, we come together And we create all this safe space. And then something had happened that really, in her experience, shattered that safe space. And I think it was Kumba. And she said, well, maybe we don't, maybe it was Malika. One of them said, maybe we don't come together to create this safe space just to feel good. Maybe we create this safe space so some of these other things can come up and can actually appear. And I just wanted to read this little quick piece from a fellow, Martin Shaw, who's a storyteller in Devon, England. He said, what we like to call a community is often a network, like-minded people singing the same hymn sheets. A real community holds village idiots, scoundrels, folks rubbing up against each other with entirely different views. It's often tense, but lack of tension rarely makes any great art or truly rousing conversation. When you focus entirely on harmony, you create an invitation for the dark side to come visit. Harmony is not the same thing as love. Harmony is not exactly our natural state, to be clear. Moments of harmony in accordance, and confirmation are wonderful. Pseudo-harmony of tyranny is not. So it's a strange motley crew we often bring together, and it's just normal and natural that there's going to be some tensions there. But it's good. It's good. These are times that need those spaces created for these things.
Can I add one thing here, Shivan?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just to say, I think for me that it was around like 2 a.m. and it was in a women's circle that was happening. This is when the jams were very wild in terms of times of things and stuff. But I do remember, Kumba and Malika kind of reiterating it in another way. But I remember that was for me the moment I fell in love with jamming in a really profound way, because it shifted something for me, this moment of saying, we're building this safe space. It's not broken when something difficult happens. It's opened. And that by opening up more to the difficult things, the challenging things, it's like we're building that space so we can open, not so we hold that sort of what you read in the quote, you know, that we hold this kind of hierarchy, tyranny of harmony, you know, but that actually it's only when we can open even more that we're going to build the relationships and the understanding that we really need. And so that for me was also such a revolutionary thing. And then everything you're saying about how the jams are trying to make that space for those weary travelers, both the conversations and the people who live those conversations on all of these different levels, you know, so many different ways. Each of us is living a living conversation. And so needing space to rest our weary bodies and hearts and spirits, and also be received, be fully received and welcomed and recognized in that. And so I just love what you shared around that. And the container building, I think that's something that a lot of jam facilitators and leaders have been reflecting on, especially these last several years of creating the container that, yes, has its roots in a Northern California culture, but that there is so much resonance actually across the human heart for that kind of container across the world. And so that can then hold the hot water and the stew and the soup and make something really delicious come out of it, just to keep mixing metaphors, because that's what we can do so easily in this work. So thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Tad. Thank you for your words and your slowness and your willingness to share story. I'm grateful to have spent this time and to get to work on this project to share out these words to for not just me, you, and Shilpa, but so that the rest of the Jamily and whoever else finds interest in our story, that they might hear, that they might share, that they might slow down. I want to, again, share our gratitude for your time and also proactively say I look forward to speaking to you on season 2 or 3 when we're talking about that little moment. Shilpa, is there anything else to say?
I mean, there's always conversations and questions. more things. I don't know if I can ever stop with that, with Tad. But I'm so grateful for your commitment to radical hospitality and generosity. And I know that from Tad was the person who greeted me also at my first jam. And I just have known that from the first moment I met you. I remember my friend dropping me off at that jam in 2002 and seeing you standing there 6'4" in your kilt. And my friend being like, "Are you going to be okay here? Is this okay?" And Tad being like, "Welcome, Shilpa. We've been expecting you. We're so happy you're here. Can I hug you?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I think I'm going to be okay. I think I'm going to be okay." And it was so much from that warm greeting and your willingness to just be yourself, you know, from that first moment to every moment that I've known you. And we've gone through some definite roads together. And I've just been so grateful for that commitment to hospitality and that commitment to generosity that's flowed through you.
Two thoughts to leave. One is, you know, in appreciation for Shilpa, I think one other thing that's so needed in these times, and this is a hard thing to ask of anyone. I don't know if it's proper to ask it of anyone, but it's a proper thing that we could all practice on our own, is forgiveness. Because all of us are going to fuck up somewhere, and heaven knows I have in this process of the jams. And I've just experienced from Shilpa a kind of forgiveness I don't always feel like I deserve. But that's how you get the feeling of deserving, is you be on the receiving end of this from other people. And then this is a real gift we can give to each other, is the forgiveness for our blunders. Cause don't we all sometimes, which makes me think point number two. Oh, this could be a good theme for a season is jam blunders. So much. I think more gets learned from the failures than the successes. We tend to forget the successes, but those failures, the war stories, we just keep those with us forever and they guide our days. So that's I vote for that for a season of failure.
I hear your vote. I'll take that into account. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
All original music was composed and recorded by Austin Willisey.